Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
I've heard quite a few deafening roars at Croke Park over the years, and I have to hand it to the Kerry fans, the wall of noise they created when Shawnee O'Shea kicked the free to win it yesterday. It was up there with the loudest. I gotta say, I think it feels even louder when you're supporting the team on the other end of a moment like this, and you're just a passive observer listening to
you're
the
listening,
cacophony.
You're not taking part of them. That's
exactly.
The difference.
You know, when you're in it, it's like, yeah, of course, that's mental, but you're so caught up in it, who knows? But when you're actually a witness to it and you're as quiet as you're ever going to be in your life, there's no way you can make any noise yourself. You're just sitting there going, oh, for fuck's sake. Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Hey, Kieran.
Hey, Owen, how's it going? That was a hell of a weekend we had right there.
And that was also the right way for Kerry to finally take down the Dubs. Let's be honest, the solid defensive structure in the first half was, you know, very, very pleasing, I'm sure, for Jack O'Connor and his coaching team. Lovely score has been kicked by David Clifford as well. It was all a bit too easy, though. You know, that's no way to shed the psychological baggage. What you need to do is dredge all the baggage right up to the surface there. Do your best to throw the game away.
Hop into the baggage, basically, and post yourself off to some unknown location. And then finally free yourself of said baggage.
Free yourself with some extreme composure. Because what I thought was amazing was, so Dublin get the, well, it was a mark originally, then it's turned into a free. So Dean Rock takes the free from really close in. Everyone knows he's going to score. And everyone's saying, oh, like even in the stands, everyone's like, oh, extra time now. And I was thinking, there's going to be at least 20 seconds left there. And Kerry have to try to get this kick out off. And Dublin, because it's a free, have all the time in the world to organise their press. And it's going to be high. It's going to be aggressive. It's going to be no cakewalk for Kerry to work this ball out of defence here. I actually thought Dublin would, you know, there's a fair chance that Dublin could turn it over and win it. And I was right, Murph. There was time for one team to win, and that was Kerry. And I did think it was, after kind of losing their nerve, it felt like at times in the second half, they got it together at the end, not just with the free, but just even to work it out, to get it high enough off the pitch to then have a free to win the game, I thought was...
Yeah.
Hats off, Murph.
Yeah, and...
I say it through gritted teeth.
It is kind of like, you know, an Aaron Rodgers final drive kind of thing, you know, where like you have to get the ball into an area where a free, you know, it can actually, you where you can win a free that can actually be, you have to get your kicker into range. And you know, there wasn't going to be a whole lot of time. Like Paul Murphy kicking that pass into David Clifford, that is not the percentage play at that exact moment. You know, there's every chance Dublin win a break there.
I don't know, though. I think if David Clifford is in your team, the percentage play is any kick towards David Clifford at that point. So I would just argue there.
And we can talk about David Clifford as well, by the way.
David Clifford!
Yeah. But, you know, to get yourself into the position then. And then, like, the second the foul happened, I turned to my dad and I was like, oh, Sean O'Shea, definitely. And then we see the keeper coming up. I was like, keeper, will you get back? Like, the balls on this guy, by the way.
Was that not just time wasting? Was that not just a little bit like Gluckson in 2011? Is he coming up? Is he not? When they knew that Sean O'Shea was going to take it. You think there was a chance that
the keeper wanted it. There was no chance that he was going to take it. But I mean, I have to admire the balls on the keeper for thinking that he even a sniff of this. Sean O'Shea was kind of by the on the Hogan stand side. And he's like, he's jogging over. He didn't exactly sprint over.
No.
You know, and you're like, Sean, like, this is it. Like, I've seen you do this multiple times. Maybe not quite into a very strong breeze, into a Hill 16, a full Hill 16, doing everything in their power to put you off. But, I mean, I have seen you kick it. So, but, yeah, it was just, what an unbelievable day's drama it was. It was just.
Are all you Kerry heads out there ready to live through it again? That final moment, I think he might be.
And the goalkeeper's coming up. They're bringing the goalkeeper, Shane Ryan. Well, he plays full forward for the club. He's the free taker. And it's going to rest on his shoulders now.
Oh, wow.
Well, he's been sent back now. The goalkeeper's been told that Sean O'Shea will take this one. The Kerry captain is placing the ball on the ground between the 45 and the 65.
Yeah, that's how they called it on Radio Kerry. Tim Moynihan and Ambrose O'Donovan at the mic, and Pádraig Lodge and RT Radio 1, all of them doing justice to an incredible moment. Up Kenmare had to be my favourite line out of that. Not up Kerry at that moment. Up Kenmare. I can't recall the same with, you know, sometimes there are incidents where I feel it showcases a difference in how things are viewed in Dublin and Kerry. I can't remember too many up Parnells going on when Stephen Gluckson kicked it free in 2011.
No.
But there you go.
No, it was...
What a way to do it.
It was a hell of a moment. It was also
so you mentioned the distance, the circumstances, the distance, the bit of a breeze going on. I don't know if lads' legs are getting stronger or technique is getting better, or the balls are getting lighter, or what's going on. But like the Rian O'Neill free for Armagh against Galway a few weeks back, Sean O'Shea kicked it from 55 metres or whatever. If he had placed the ball down on the halfway line, he would have given it a fair go.
This thing was going to go
seriously
over.
It was so far over the bar. It was unbelievable, the distance. And Jack O'Connor was saying afterwards that he didn't think it was kickable. He was all getting ready for extra time.
Now, I mean, you know, you probably don't even remember the 1987 All-Ireland football semi-final between Cork and Galway. On, do you? No, I won't press you for an answer on that one. But Larry Tompkins did have a bloody big old boot on him, to be fair. Derek Duggan, it was that 91 Connacht final for Roscommon against Mayo. There have been big frees hit in the past, to be fair. I mean, the Rian O'Neill one is still an even better free than the Sean O'Shea free. Now, maybe, you know, you do have to factor in the fact that it's into a full Hill 16. It's against the Dubs. It's similar to Rean's last kick of the game, I suppose. It says something for the quality of free taking in this year's championship that was not the best free hit this year. Because Rean's is on the angle. You know, it's on the angle and nearly is as far out as Sean O'Shea. So, either way, though, pretty bloody good free taking. I mean, you take into account the fact that Shane Walsh was hit three unbelievable pressure frees with his bad foot, and you'd have to say, like, that's pretty much the level of free taking you need in
I
your
see
team.
What you're doing, where if you're trying to turn this into a Galway show, okay then, I'll give you your dues. Galway had their own dramatic moment, where if the fans lifted the roof off the place just at the start of the second half, when it was announced that Hawkeye had messed up and Shane Walsh's first half point was being awarded after all. Which was a kind
that
of bizarre moment.
Utterly bizarre. But I mean, the entire halftime was completely bizarre, because even before halftime, the halftime whistle had been blown, everyone was getting text messages saying, here, what the hell is going on? So it kind of, as the halftime whistle goes, I think it was raised then on RTE, just after the whistle goes, as the teams were running in, they showed another replay of the point, which obviously showed that the point was clearly inside the post. So the entire play, I mean, they might as well have just like sent out one of those government text messages about, you know, the COVID-19 text messages. Like the, it was, or you know, like you're in Hawaii and there's a tsunami warning or something. You know what I mean? It's like literally everyone gets the exact same text message. That's what might as well have happened in Croke Park, because everyone's phone went off. Here, that's a fucking pointless. So, yeah, it was really odd. Like even standing in the queue for the bathroom or something at halftime, and everyone is just like passing each other's phones around with the video of the point. So it was obviously a very strange scenario. But then the fact that it was so close to halftime meant that the right thing had to happen. I mean, I was sat there with some friends of mine going, I mean, I don't know what recourse to rule there is in this. Like, it's like there is no rule for this.
I don't know how they would. Yeah, I don't know how they would have sorted that out if it was like that. It was in the middle of a half, and also even the fact that it happened at the end, they were. Imagine that happened at the end of full time, and Derry think they've just won by a point, yeah, and they're off celebrating, and you're having to call Galway back in the dressing room, and you're calling them back in. It would have been absolute madness. So they got away with one. Poor old Hawkeye was stood down, of course. But
yeah, I mean, let's just say that Offaly in '98 was mentioned by a couple of Galway fans in my vicinity. Get down there. Sit down on the field. You're going
nice
nowhere.
Nice day for it as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Gee, so
you can only really, you can commit to a sit-down protest on a nice sunny day.
Yeah, oh, you'd head for the car park otherwise. But it was a delightful evening. So, yeah, I mean, that was more like just another daft thing that happened on a pretty daft weekend.
And in fairness, though, Galway put it away in the second half. Damien Comer, we're going to talk to Oisin and Paul in a few minutes' time, and I'm sure Comer's performance will come up. The first goal, I know Oisin was quite taken by. I just thought the second goal was so funny. It was one of those ones where you don't see them very often. Well, you might continue to see them more now that goalkeepers on nearly every team seem to think that they're half forwards now. So the keeper's off his line, he's gone, there's only a defender back. It's not an easy finish, but you think, as you would say, Murph, the percentage play might be to roll it gently towards the goal and just make sure you have it. You know, it's not going to hit the crossbar, it's not going to bounce over.
That was my target. The crossbar, you know, that like in a million years, like how, what are the chances? And yet, you know, when your team hasn't won in Ireland in a while, you know, these are the sort of thoughts that like go through your head in like a split second as you see the ball.
It was so
arrowing.
Brilliant though. It was so brilliant that he did it the way he did it. It just looked, it was even better. It just had you up off.
Just so much conviction about it. I mean, and like that's the word for Damien Comer, is just conviction in everything he does. If he makes a run for the ball, he makes it impossible for you to not pass him the ball. Like his first point, like the first point of the game, goalless first point of the game, was the most important score of the entire game, because it came, whatever, in the 22nd minute. Everything had gone perfectly to plan for Derry. I mean, they'd kicked a few wides, but, you know, the idea for Derry was get ahead, stay ahead, squeeze the game, end the game. That's the plan. And Galway were rushing their shots. At one stage, I mean, I think it might have been actually a couple of minutes after Comer's first point, but there was a group of like seven or eight Galway players just stood in the middle of the field in a huddle talking to each other. And I was like, lads, you know, we knew what was coming. Why are we still figuring this out? But to be fair, like you can do all these video analysis sessions in the world and it will not prepare you for actually playing it. I mean, Keith Duggan compared watching Derry live as opposed to watching them on television to watching a lunar eclipse through a keyhole, which I thought was an amazing line in the Irish Times this morning. So you can imagine what playing against them compared to just watching them on video must be like. And it just took Galway a couple of minutes to figure it out. But that first point that Comer got, it was just, he was standing on the 45 and all of a sudden he just goes and you're left with no option but to pass the ball to him. He takes a second solo, kick off the left. And all of a sudden, Galway are in the game. Derry get the next score, but Galway they're starting to move. And they'll just those couple of points before halftime. By the time halftime comes, and then the Hawkeye nonsense makes it 4-4 as opposed to 4-3, I actually felt Galway were in a pretty good position at that stage. I thought that they had weathered most of what Derry had to throw at them. And then the conviction with which Galway played the first 15 minutes of the second half. And then they just managed the game from there, you know, and it was obviously a pretty poor spectacle. I was getting plenty of text messages from people during the game telling me what
it was a poor spectacle that was rescued by Damien Comer.
By Damien Comer, exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And like, I think that this is, you know, it is a recurring theme that, you know, when you have forwards like that, you have a chance in games that you otherwise wouldn't. And Walsh has done it in the past. Damien Comer has done it in the past and is doing it now. But I have to reserve a special word of praise for John Daly, who I think, you know, if Golic want to win this All-Ireland, he will be in the running for Player of the Year. He has just been exceptional time and time again. Brilliant pass into Damien Comer for the second of his points in the first half. Another pinpoint pass in the second half. I mean, Comer can make all these runs, but you have to put it in front of him. I mean, you don't have to hit him on the chest with it, but you do have to give him a chance. Daly hit a couple of brilliant passes into him. The turnover for the second goal, it's an unbelievable bit of defending. It's Conor Glass has it in his hand, and then he doesn't have it in his hand. And Daly picks it up, moves it on, two passes later, it's in the back of the net. And Daly has just been he's just been so, so good for a young player who's had his fair share of injuries. He's just stepped up massively, you know, and he's a huge defensive weapon for Galway. And you know, just like, we haven't had a brilliant centre back since my own club man Jeremy Blake 10 years ago. And just to have someone that good in that important a position, he's very much an understated and underrated player, I think, but he's top class.
It was such a weekend of sport that it can't possibly be contained in this one podcast. Ireland have beaten the All Blacks in New Zealand, setting up perfectly.
Oh, yeah,
potentially,
that happened this weekend as well.
Exactly. It seems like a long time ago.
It really does.
A potentially momentous day next Saturday. And it's also perfectly set up for our World Service members who get to hear our rugby chat on tomorrow's podcast. That's Tuesday's pod. It's going to go out after the game against the Maori All Blacks, which is on tomorrow morning. So we'll be looking back at what happened on Saturday, also looking forward to what could be a momentous occasion next Saturday, and we'll bring you news of whatever happens in that final midweek game. That's a good solid rugby slot, if you ask me. That's worth being a World
Service. There's more than enough to get stuck into there. There's the All-Ireland Hurling Final as well on this Sunday. I mean, we just don't have time. I don't even have the headspace to think about the All-Ireland Hurling Final yet, but it will happen this week also.
Now, it's the Flynn McConville Show.
And he is my second captain.
Second captain, that's a humorous competition.
I saw that. Important man for my selection.
What is it all about?
There's no tennis, it's bold as a peak.
David Clifford! I love me county.
It's a dump.
We're going to do it.
Well, the sun was shining. Croke Park looked fantastic. Oisín McConville looked even better on the Sunday game. A bloody fine weekend, all in all. Unless, of course, you're from Dublin or Derry. Hey, Oisín, how are you?
All in his form.
Ah, it's been better. It's been better. Paul, how are things?
Morning, I'm with you on this.
Yeah, well, let's get through. Let's offer our congratulations. Let's be the bigger men about this, Paul. I don't think there's anyone really arguing today that the better team lost at Croke Park yesterday.
I prefer if you didn't put words in my mouth. However, No, I'm only kidding. Look, it was definitely for a lot of that game, Dublin played second fiddle. However, like, I still left feeling that, like, they probably could have won. It'd be a bit of a push to say they should have won, but they could have won. And in the last quarter of the game, I felt that, like, the momentum was with them and that they were due. They just never got a prolonged period of dominance. They just kind of, they were literally kind of holding on. They kind of stayed in the game, but they just didn't then capitalise on it. And I just felt that, like, what we feared probably coming into it in relation to the I didn't think the Kerry squad off the bench made any real impact. I still felt that we didn't have any impact off our bench, and we could have it could have made a difference in the end. But look, to be honest with you, it was like coming right into this with raw emotion. Like, I didn't really get a chance to actually reflect on the game too much. It's early on a Monday morning. I was in there. It was unbelievable. Mm. Like, the atmosphere in there was just electrifying. It was a game that was probably worthy of a bit of magic to win it, and that's what we got. Because they're like any Dublin Kerry game, we chatted about this last week, they take a life of their own. When we were a better team, there was still only a kick of a ball in it. This Kerry team, just they're going the right direction, and Dublin's are probably not going the right direction. And it was still only a kick of the ball in it, you know. So yeah, great day out in Croke Park yesterday.
Yeah, we were talking about the noise, O'Shane, when the free was hit, and the fact that there was no time for any comeback at that point. It was everyone goes mental, then full time whistle is blown, everyone goes doubly mental, and it's an amazing moment. Even for a county as steeped in success as Kerry have been historically, those sort of moments are just amazing to have. The way they got that done in the end, despite very nearly throwing it away, where do you think they're at psychologically this morning?
Well, I just think if anybody wants to know what it meant, I mean, the reaction afterwards, not just to the players, but like, Jesus, the fans who actually turned up, and not only turned up as in body, but turned up as in really got behind their team. Whereas psychologically, I mean, that has to be the boost that they would want going into an All-Ireland final. I personally, being the individual that I am, would have loved to seen Dublin go one up, just like they never led in the game, just to really spook Kerry and see, you know, what was going on. A real gut check, but that never really materialised. But I have to say, the way Kerry turned over the ball when they really had to, and I know there was a period in the game where it was just like one turnover after another, and it just took some real, real cool heads. Dublin's problem was that they were really reliant on the older guys when it really come down the stretch. I thought, you know, I thought Kilkenny, Fenton, McCarthy, I thought they were absolutely phenomenal. Like, even Brian Fenton stepping inside and kicking the one with his left foot that I had chalked down, and only realised afterwards that it was actually just tail wide. But the way those guys stood up, and then the way Sean O'Shea stood up at the end, even the Paul Murphy chip into Clifford, who's coming running out for the ball, like, all that takes is a fist just to get that ball away, and all of a sudden we're going into extra time. So there was a litany of small little moments, you know, Scully's shot that I never felt he should have took on, a litany of so many small little things that the game could have turned on. I was full of admiration actually for Dublin after. I was full of admiration because they looked as if they were dead and buried. I mean, the penalty looked as if it was going to be, if that goes in, you know, it's a long, long way back. And I think Kerry just keep passing those tests, regardless of how they do it, you know, they're able to do it. And as I say, yesterday felt really significant right at the end, because regardless of how they did it, they did it. And I think that was the important thing for them. And I think they had a lot, like Sean O'Shea and David Clifford, Obugliak, all those guys were, you know, they were outstanding. I mean, you consider, like, you know, they're up against some of the best. It was, you know, as much as, you know, you would have loved to have seen them maybe prove one more point. I mean, there's only so much they can do in one game, and they roll on into the final with against a team that looked as if they are on a similar path. That game delivered in a huge way yesterday. Even though, as I said last night, if you wanted to, like, you could really pick a lot of holes in some of the quality in the middle. But it's just that it's the atmosphere. It's the intent. The intensity. It's everything. And like, you have to really be thinking so clearly when you're under that microscope and under that pressure.
And as when I was walking into the game, sorry for more for going across there, but like what you say there, O'Shane, when I was walking into the game with a mate of mine, and we were walking down Clonliffe Road, and we were talking about games of old, and talking about how imperfect they were, and talking about how that made them so entertaining. And in pursuit of perfection, I suppose, you know, it sometimes can take away from the beauty of the game, right? And yesterday there were so many mistakes. You could critically analyse it, and you could say, well, what the hell? What was the turnover rate? What was the decision making here? All them things. But that's probably what made it such a good game, was that there were so many turnovers and there were mistakes, because it showed that the players cared. It showed that there was so much on the line. Yeah, and I just thought that was kind of one of the things that struck me, was that kind of nearly made it.
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. Just explain to us again, Oisin, really quickly, about the cut of the grass in Croke Park and why that makes a difference to free takers. Because again, as I was watching it, Sean O'Shea puts it on, like, he doesn't even try to steal any yards. I don't know who I was sticking up for saying that someone didn't try to steal yards, and everyone shouted me down, and actually you guys were right. Was it Rean O'Neill was trying to steal a few?
Yeah,
what's the story there, Oisin?
Well, the story is, when you're, like, if you've seen the two cuts of grass, if you put it on the first one, you've got absolutely no, you know, in the traditional pitches, you get a little bit of a tuft. You might have to move it around. It's like anybody who plays golf, lift clean in place, you always snake the look for a little tuft, even if it is outside the old 6 inches or that. But it's the same thing in Croke Park. Like I used to, the 45 one used to be interesting, because I actually used to take it back a couple of yards outside the 45, even though I was already struggling for distance. And that was because of the way the grass went. And the reason for that was that it's impossible to kick off the one that's going away from you. And the one that's coming slightly towards you gives you, you know, a much better chance to get it sitting up on some sort of height. So that's really.
So that would explain why he didn't try to steal any yards. He didn't want to put it into that other.
Well, actually, court. Not only did he, because we checked, not only did he not try and steal yards, but he actually took it back just into that cut. So he probably took it back probably a yard and a half back into that cut. So that just shows you how important it was. And obviously, the difference for him was that, like, you seen where the ball finished. You know, it finished halfway up the ball catcher. So, like, he wasn't going to struggle for distance. So I think he realised that, even though he was into the wind. But the adrenaline definitely gives you another 10 yards.
Yeah. I mean, it's a distance, but like that, just to plant it practically over the black spot as well, Paul, with all the pressure. I know they'd still have extra time if he missed it, but they didn't need that in the end.
No, and he had some first half too, and like I have to say, that wasn't just him. It was a well organized Kerry team allowed him to get the better of John Small in the first half. So there was a lot of being in there now. Like Jack Barry played his usual role of kind of destroyer, or kind of just being a tough body around the place. Like the number of times where Kerry were on the attack, he would just leave his man, no interest in the ball, just run straight for John Small and just double up on him. And he did the same on Clifford's man, which was like, you know, it was just clever play from it's playing on the line, but it's clever play, you know. And they targeted the fact that John Small has taken Sean O'Shea out of the game every time he played him over the last number of years. And in the first half, he absolutely was on top. Now, bear in mind, like, the game was very, like, when you watch it on TV, and the highlights last night don't do that really any justice. Like, you had to see the whole thing, and you had to feel it, the wind, and be in there, because even when you're in the stand, there was a decent wind there in the first half for Kerry, and it's similar for Dublin, obviously, in the second half. So that played a role in the lads not having as much of an impact in the second half, but equally, the Dublin lads were a bit more aggressive. They played out in front a bit more, and they kind of they did get on top. So, but the two of them, like in the first half in particular, Clifford got a ball underneath the Cusick stand, and he did a sidestep, and then went through two Dublin players and kicked it over the bar. It was one of the points of the year. His power, his pace is just frightening, you know. And At times in the first half, Dublin just left, were too exposed. And what we discussed actually after the Cork game, and I thought Cork did it a few times, just didn't have the quality to finish it off, but kick out quickly, turn and kick the ball into the full forward line. And it was nothing too tactical. It was just quick transition, and they left the Dublin lads exposed because they were pressing up on kick out. So in hindsight, I would have preferred to see Dublin. I actually just wanted Dublin to play a sweeper for the whole game. But if there was that wind, I definitely would have played it, like, you know, just a bit more structurally, because Johnny is so good at it that you could have probably cut out some of that stuff. So, and then you see what happens when Johnny has a man mark. Like, it's a much more difficult role. Yeah. And he's like a lot of injuries and a lot of miles in the legs. He's just he doesn't have that in him as much as he did, obviously. So they were dead and buried, like, come half time, you know, and the penalty obviously saved us. I watched, initially watching the penalty, I was like, didn't have any idea, probably because I had my hands in my head in my hands, but I didn't have any idea what was the reason for the kerfuffle afterwards. But then I watched it last night again, to be quite honest with you now, and I'm obviously biased and people will think that, to me, that's a red card. And I'll take a pause there for a second, because it is, right? And we can talk about it all we want. It was accidental. But he's in the goalkeeper's 6-yard box. He pulled on the right boot. If he tries to poke it in, that's fair game. But it was the follow through and it kicks the goalkeeper in the head. And we talked about last year in relation to John Small's incident. Entirely different incident. I'm not trying to compare it, but the words used for everybody was duty of care to the player. And I think in that instance, like, you can't, you can really hurt somebody if you're going to kick them in the head. So that was, and I wouldn't even have wanted it, to be honest with you, because it could have ruined the game. And it was just when you see it, I don't think there was anything made of it.
Well, just Oisín on that one before we go on with the rest of the game. Oisín, you don't agree with that was a red?
Well, the ball is at least a yard away from Evan Comfort when he draws on it. I mean, it's there's a bit of a follow through, but there's absolutely nothing in it. Absolutely not. There's no way that was a red card.
And accidentally or not, he still kicked him in the head, Oisín. Like, that's the thing, and it's in the 6-yard box. If the right foot, which is why he went with the ball, which is a yard away, the left foot followed through and kicked him in the face, you know. So it's a kick in the face, accidentally or not. So that, look, it's fair game that, like, some people have their opinion on it, but I can guarantee if it was a Dublin player, it would be a different view. And not just from the Sunday game, just in general, nothing was really made of it. But and if not, anyway, it's dangerous play. If it's a yellow card, it's a yellow card. He got booked later on. So,
Oisín, last word. You're categorical. So, what's your reasoning for not being a red card? As Paul says, he went for the follow through. He went for the ball was saved. He tries to kick it home, has every right to, I think, and kicks it with his right. It's the left leg then that catches. I would have thought inadvertently catches the goalkeeper.
Yeah, like, Evan Comfort's coming towards him. You know, he's going towards Evan Comfort. You know, the ball's there to be played, and it's completely accidental.
It was unnatural action, to be honest. But anyway, look, we're not going to agree on it, but it doesn't really matter. And you know what? It doesn't take away from the game. I just thought it was one of the moments of the game that went for Kerry. I also thought another moment of the game that went for Kerry. Actually, I thought every second ball Kerry won, right? That's not got to do with a man. That's not got to do with decisions. It's just got to do with, I think it's got to do with the structure that Kerry had in attack and in defence was better. Whereby if they were in attack, they never really left themselves isolated. So if they turned, so if Dublin did get contact and dislodge the ball or make, you know, a play, the Kerry guys picked it up. They won every second ball. And in defence, if Dublin were going at them, Dublin, it was either a case that Dublin were leaving themselves isolated or that Kerry's structure defensively was better, that if Kerry dislodged the ball, they won it back and they went on the transition. And that happened time and time again. It's a stat that's probably hard to measure, but it just felt every time that we were going into contact or they were, we just didn't come out on top of those little things. And then one other questionable one, and I actually didn't see it enough but when John Small gets black carded, which is 100% black card, I thought Le Hif was fouled inside the 13-yard line. Right, he was. Look, there's letting the game go, and there's just technical fouls, and I think that he was fouled in that instance, and they just turned the ball over. Not sure if you remember it, Oisín, you know, he's reviewed it last night.
Not sure, no.
But it was it's worth looking back on. It was one of those ones where, yeah, you can understand letting the game go, but you can also, there's technical fouls and he pulled his arm back and it was a free, and that would have been different, obviously. But so anyway, all they are little decisions, and for years, little decisions went their way. And it's because, sometimes it's because of, there's no reason for it. And then other times it's just because of you, maybe the energy you're bringing to a game or the way you're playing, they just happen to fall your way. A little bit of luck. It's important in games like that when there's only a kick of a ball in it. But aside from that, like, you know, I could not argue that Kerry were the better team overall. You know, I was immensely proud of Dublin actually leaving in a weird way. Like, that's they really died on their sword. And it's not that it was just all about the emotion of it. It was more got to do with lads stood up. Lads just, you know, James McCarthy, like, I don't know what else you could say about the man. He was probably stuck together, you know, with glue just to get out onto that pitch. And then he puts in a shift that, like, I didn't think he even still had that in him. Not the point, because he's been doing that. Them things. It was the tackles. It was the contact. It was the way kicking a point, sprinting back 50 yards, and then winning the punch back for a kick from the kick out. Like, he just dominated every player that came near him. He was a pure warrior of the game. It's just that. So, like, when you see that, I will never go to a Dublin game and be nothing other than proud when you see lads given that. And we all know the quality these lads have, so it's not as if it's not there. But I think, critically looking at it, there just wasn't enough playmakers. It took Fento to have to get the ball to kick it into Paddy Small to win that mark. But there's probably just too many players around that just are not playmakers, that they just will check back and they will hand pass the ball off to someone else. Whereas a couple of years ago, the ball would be with anybody and anyone would make that pass, and we'd back anyone to make it, and there just wasn't that enough of them playmakers everywhere on the pitch. But
there's too many Dublin players that are probably just not there yet, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if they're going to get there, but there's too many that just aren't just there yet. As again, I don't know if they are going to get there, but yesterday, like, they were very, very reliant on a lot of the old guard.
But, you know, Oisín, that is the way of things, you know. When you look at teams, like, they're going to have, like the days of Dublin having 20 players of roughly equal quality, that was never going to, you know, that's just not a thing that ever happens, you know. Like, the one thing I would say is that I don't think Desi Farrell gave the Dubs the best chance to win this game, Oish. You know, at the end of the day, like, the amount of times I saw Paddy Clifford picking up the ball in the middle of the field, and then you take a glance up towards the Davin end, particularly in the first half, and it's just like 50 yards, like, literally 40-50 yards in front of David Clifford with no one else sweeping in front of Mick Fitzsimons.
And it was rarely happening the other way, Murph. You know, the Dublin full forwards never seemed to be, you know, it got a bit ragged towards the end, but for the first 50 minutes they weren't getting any space.
I would question the Dublin inside forwards movement, to be honest, but that's kind of a different question. At the end of the day, like, there are ways to allow Kerry to beat you, and allowing David Clifford to put on a clinic for 35 minutes, like, you just can't do it. Like, you, and, like, I don't know if that's like, arrogance is a loaded word, right? But there's, like, an element of, like, self-confidence amongst this Dublin team, obviously, for all the All-Irelands that they won. And this idea that you don't put a sweeper in front of David Clifford, I mean, it's I think it's either arrogance or it's daftness. You know, I couldn't believe what I was looking at yesterday.
Yeah, it was mismanaged, just in particular in the first half, I thought. And I think, you know, like, I was talking about yesterday about, you know, Evan Comfort wasted 3.5 minutes, you know, and I thought, you know, that's really smart football, you know, running down that clock in the way they did. But there was so many other things that weren't smart. There was two pieces of defending in particular in the game. There was the Owen Marchand one for the goal, and there was one in the second half from Brian Howard that let Paddy Clifford in for a fisted point. Both just simple, basic, just stay goal, say to your man. But again, the pressure that they were under because they were one-on-one most of the time, I think, really come home to roost, you know, at different stages in the game. But first half was criminal to leave those guys hanging out to dry like that.
But lastly, Paul, on Kerry, Do you think this answers the character question? Sometimes it doesn't matter how you get over the line as long as you get over the line. Because obviously you're watching that throughout the second half. You're saying, Kerry are actually all over the place here. You know, they were bottling it for large portions of the second half. Their composure was gone. Is this the character question answered? Or are they just very, very lucky to have a free taker with a rocket for a right boot to save their bacon?
Do you know what? Like, when you don't, when you're building character as a team, you need to get games like this under your belt, and it just builds, right? You have to stutter over the line at the start, and then the next time you just become a little bit better, and it's about layering on. It's not a case of one game, okay, now you've got character. It's all these small steps so it's definitely a small step, and that'll stand to them, and that's for sure. I'm in the second half, there was part of it that was down to how they tactically played rather than psychologically at many parts. Like, they tried to control the ball, they tried to take the sting out of play. And I was actually saying to myself, if they go for this, we are screwed, because they are killing us in the full forward line. So that it suited us. So what that told me is, looking forward now to the final, is I think they're going to struggle against Galway. And now I need a little bit more time to think about it. As I say, it's Monday morning. I was playing a few things around in my head last night, and then they were probably all daft because I was full of emotion and a few beers. But the thing to me is, like, they played pure counter-attack and it worked for them in the first half, but they won't get that luxury against Galway. And I said this, you can go back through the podcast, I have not yet seen a time where Kerry have dominated against a set defence. And they're going to face that against Galway. And Galway are going to try counter them. So it could be a dour final, like, where we just see two teams sitting back, holding their six players in position, and just a lot of back and forth. But I think on the character question, Murph, I think you need wins like this to start the journey of just believing. And now that's definitely going to stand to them.
What about Galway then, Oisin? How impressed were you with how they got the job done on Saturday?
Well, I would say after 29 minutes, I would say this is the most dairy game that you're ever likely to see. It was just seemed to be, the only thing that wasn't happening was Derry weren't, you know, putting the scores on the scoreboard. You know, that they weren't chipping on another one, another one, another one. And 29 minutes, you know, you would think, you know, 6-7-1, something like that. And you know, Derry are a really happy team, but the way that Galway had the ability to turn it around, I mean, like, the shift in energy between the first half and the second half was absolutely incredible. I mean, the scores before half time were important. There's absolutely no doubt about that. They were important because, you know, to go in 4-3, turned out 4-4 at half time was so important. But the way they dominated the second half, the way they turned Derry over, I mean, like, they made that Derry team that looked so ruthless and so capable of getting goals, and they just blunted them completely. I mean, like, I walked away thinking, like, Galway have absolutely dominated Derry for 40 minutes, absolutely dominated them. And they obviously have a huge amount of quality up front, and, like, they have to go into the final just absolutely relishing it. And again, you know, the last day we talked about Tierney and we talked about Finnerty and how good they were, and okay, they were blunted a little bit again at the weekend, but for Comer to step up in the way he did, and Shane Walsh, you know, even just from free kicks, but you have to nail your free kicks when you're playing against Derry, when you're playing against, you know, this Kerry team in the final. You get opportunities, you just have to nail them. You know, and every one that you do gives you energy. Every one that you miss gives the opposition energy. But Coma, like, like, this is, like, this is, he is so sharp. He is so strong.
Like, to score something like that, you know, that kind of tally in a mad free scoring match where it's 3-17 to 2-14 or something is one thing. To score, what was it, 2-2 in a low scoring game where every score mattered for a period was just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, no, I did a thing actually last night on where he picked up the ball in the first half, and he was picking it up so deep. He was doing such a good job for his team. Oh, but Jesus, like, whenever he put him in full forward and, you know, he's making those, like, he only, the one he got the goal off Brendan Rodgers where his movement, it was literally 4 yards. He was so quick over 4 yards. And I can tell you, Brendan Rodgers can shift. And when he turned him, I mean, his finish, there's only one place he can put that down low in under the keeper. He looks so sharp on, and I was looking at him. He started playing with Galway in 2014. So you probably think, here's a guy with 50 appearances for his county at championship level. He doesn't. He spent a lot of time out injured. He spent a lot of time, you know, being half fit going into games. But he is absolutely flying. I can't tell you how sharp he is. He is ridiculously sharp, and he is so difficult to mark. So difficult to mark, and he has developed the left foot. I don't know if it's standing beside Shane Walsh at training and being embarrassed or whatever it is, but he's developed that left foot, and that has helped him because he can go either side now. But ridiculously sharp, and his finishing on Saturday just matched everything that we've been like when he burst on the scene. Like he was exactly what Galway needed, but that never materialised for a number of reasons, and the main reason was, you know, through injury. But he actually hasn't played as much football as you think because of injury, and now he looks as if he's just ready to explode again.
Do you think Galway improved from the Armagh game, Paul, or did we just see something very different from them on Saturday?
No, I think they have definitely improved. But like, remember they were six up against Armagh. Like they played quite well there too. So they've just been playing very well. They're very well set up. What I like about them is that they analysed their opposition. Obviously, they have a set way that they play, but they definitely look at what their opposition are doing in detail. And that's probably the Keane O'Neill effect, and they try to kind of amend their system to suit. And two kind of telling areas there was one on the kick out for Derry. Like it was so aggressive from Galway. They had five up in their own full forward line, you know, at times, and just trying to force them long. And then they got a good return from that one. They did force them long. And second was when we spoke about last week as well about Derry's ability to attack the wings, and I actually genuinely didn't actually see this before the weekend, is where Derry, like, it was probably over egged at times. I think this was probably they needed a balance, but the way they just transitioned purposely just to let their forwards or anybody at that, doesn't have to be a forward, to get inside the full forward line, and they like sometimes had six players inside the full forward line, you know, two in the corner, two in the full forward, and two in the other corner. And that'll allow them to then attack the wings, so that if they were going down one side, they didn't have to transition the ball across. They could just keep going because they had numbers. But Galway were very wide to it. Not initially, but they then got a grip of it very, very quickly. And that's a sign of a good team to figure it out, because that was an innovation that Gallagher brought this year to Derry, and it's worked for them. But you're just at times, I felt that for all the tactical prowess and intelligence that Gallagher has, Galway seemed to be better set up and they seemed to be able to adjust, whereas Derry just looked a little bit one-dimensional. If that didn't work, they didn't really ever just try to turn the ball over and then just transition at a complete pace. It was always just kind of a little bit just... a little bit slower, and yeah, so but it was Galway are certainly stepping up, and players just keep on, you know, making a name for themselves each game. But I just feel that what they'll get from this, coming through a tough side of the draw, I know, like, you know, it's not the Kerry and Dublin were on one side, but all tough games. You talk about character building the Kerry from a Galway perspective. They're seriously, seriously big in the character building games. They've come true.
Hush, like that, I mean, you know, even with one eye in the final now, like, you know, I was saying last week on the show that it felt like, certainly a lot of the previews are making the point that if the winner of the Dublin-Kerry game would be the favourites for the final, you know, if it was Dublin, they'd be back and all that kind of stuff. If it's Kerry, they would have got the Dublin monkey off their back, which they have done. But I don't know, watching the way Galway did it on Saturday, Has to change that somewhat. And even listening to Paul there about the challenge that Galway are going to present to Kerry, I mean, how much this must sicken Mayo people listening to this, that we're now talking about Galway nipping in and winning an All-Ireland this year. But like, what I'm asking is it 50-50 in the final?
Yeah, it looks that way. And you know what was the, you know what I think Pádraig Joyce and the boys will love was Lachlan Murray's goal. I think that's a hugely important score because it refocuses the mind again. Because I think the second half was almost too perfect for Galway going into a final. And I think just that little bit of indecision, that little bit of a lapse of concentration, they've sorted out most of it. And there was another little thing that now that again will focus the mind. So just right at the end, you know, Galway got another little, you know, reminder of, you know, what can happen if we even switch off slightly. So Galway are going into the, as much as, you know, Paul has said about Kerry going into the final in a nice way, I actually think that Galway are still going into the final feeling they have a little bit left in the tank and a little bit left to prove. So I think that the commentary before the semi-finals, you're 100% correct, whoever comes out of Dublin and Kerry, but I think that mindset has dramatically changed since they've seen the performance of Galway. Because I tell you what, and I don't want to overemphasize this, but I do think that when myself and Paul first talked about Galway Mayo at the start of the year, one of the things we talked about, or certainly I talked about, was the underbelly. What's inside? What's when you dig really, really deep into the tough championship games? What's there? Is it fluffy, or have they got the toughness that you need and the badness to win in All Ireland? And they now also have football smarts. And I know I'm using that too much. I know I'm using that word too much, but they have. There's a little ruthless streak there. There's a little bit of badness that has crept in. Nothing over the top. Nothing like that. But the things that you need in order to win in All Ireland. And you know, if that was the question mark against them, then they have answered that with spades. But I think nobody has given them credit for just how good they are on the ball, how good their decision making is, and how good they are down the stretch, and how dangerous they are at the top of the field.
So, Galway not fluffy, basically, is the headline from today's show. And I would agree with that, Oisín. I'll tell you one final question on Derry, Paul. I'll tell you what's really weird. Derry's, like, almost pathological caution in every aspect of the game, except for fly goalie. It seems like a really strange exception to a rule where you don't take any risks on the ball whatsoever, except for your goalie, who will be taking shots from 25 yards out and then getting, three... Or it was Conor Glass, in fairness, that got turned over for the goal. But I mean, it's so odd. I mean, why would you make that the exception to the rule?
I don't know the answer to that question, but you know my feeling on these fly goalkeepers. I've made it clear earlier on in the year, I'm not a fan. I'm a fan when it's Eden Rafferty, because he's not a goalkeeper, and he comes out with such power and like dynamic and just, yeah. But like the goalkeeper, like is a good goalkeeper. That's why he's in goal, right? But when he comes out the field, he just didn't even look comfortable, like on the ball. It was red alert, and I could not understand it. And then look, it's just a team now. I think the goalkeeper is like, you know, they all, any goalkeeper I've ever played with has all had a bit of a mad streak in them, right? And in a good way, but they all have. And even when Derry are six, or when Galway are six up, the Galway goalkeeper starts coming out. And I'm saying to myself, is he winding me up? Like is there six up? Like, the game is dead and buried. Just stay right between in the middle of two posts. See the two white posts? Just stand right in the middle there and don't even leave that 6-yard box.
That thought did cross my mind also, to be fair.
So I don't know why. I just, you know, I would have loved to see a little bit. I, to be honest with you, there was more risk taken in Derry this year. They just, whether it was tactically, they just didn't feel like that they could go for it. But like how they didn't drop the odd ball in and at least test each half, I would have, like, if they're so coordinated about everything they do, you know, I would have at least twice each half popped two balls on that keeper's head and just had a set play for it. Because we seen what happened when Armagh did it, caused chaos. And Galway would have worked on that for the last 2 weeks. You can be sure of that. But even when you work on things and that happens in the heat of battle, you are tested, and they should have dropped a few balls in there. A little bit more. I'd say Derry would be kicking themselves that they didn't take more risks when they wake up this morning.
Oisin, word before we let you guys go on Westmead winning the Tailteann Cup and winning it in a bit of style as well. It got a pretty good day out.
Yeah, was actually really impressed with Westmead. I was full sure that Cavan would win that competition. Maybe that was part of the problem. But the thing with Westmead was you just had I thought a huge amount of energy. Wallace gives them that from centre half back. I thought O'Toole was out of this world. I thought he was, and Cavan just didn't clamp them down. The stat that I used last night was Westmead won 23 out of 23 kickouts, which is an amazing stat. Jason Daly, goalkeeper, deserves a lot of credit for that. But like Cavan had pushed up on at least 14 or 15 of them, and the fact that they pushed out up. Westmead get the kick out of the way and they get punished at the far end of the field. So I just thought coming out of when you're talking about second tier teams, but you're talking about a stat like that, I thought that was immeasurably the reason why they won the game. I know that the Thomas Galligan incident, him getting sent off, it finished up 1-4 to no score in favour of Westmead after he got sent off. So, I mean, that's a huge turning point in the game, but I thought the kick out stats were class.
All right, listen, we let the two of you go off and think about the All-Ireland for the next couple of weeks and what's going to happen there. Paul O'Sheen, brilliant stuff. Thanks a mil.
Thanks, Ez.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations. They are amazing. Stupendous.
We'll give the lads a bit of time to get their heads in the game for the All-Ireland football final. Murph, as you said, we got to start thinking about the hurling All-Ireland. It's on this Sunday. This championship is coming thick and fast.
Yeah, it is. To be fair, the All-Ireland hurling final has often been overshadowed by the football semi-finals, which has happened in the past on the week before the All-Ireland hurling final. But you kind of lump that in with the fact that it's still July the 11th is all, and we're sat here thinking about an All-Ireland hurling final. And I think a lot of people are wrestling with a very strange question that maybe they never really expected to have to ask themselves.
Go on.
Who are we shouting for in this All-Ireland hurling final? I mean, Limerick against Kilkenny. This should not be a difficult choice, and yet Limerick have been so dominant, have won three, looking for four, and Kilkenny obviously are so doughty, so resilient, so admirable in so many ways. I mean, sure there are a lot of Galway, Tipperary, Cork people wrestling with some very odd emotions this week. Very, very strange emotions. So I'll have to try and get my head around the idea that maybe Kilkenny winning in All-Ireland isn't the worst thing in the world anymore. Maybe they're the good guys in an inversion of that David Mitchell meme.
We'll preview that one for you on the World Service. We've got our big rugby chat tomorrow. There's a Murph and Mal movie club going out later this week. Some of you might never have had the pleasure of listening to Murph and Mal talk sports movies. This has been a slot that we've had quite a bit of over the last couple of years. Not for too long though, Murphy. You're bringing it back to talk about the new Adam Sandler movie, Hustle, and also Rollerball. This is obviously after the passing of James Caan last week. This is I've never seen it, Murph. I hear it's a kind of mad sports related movie that James Caan delivers a memorable performance in, so seems like a good one to talk about.
Yeah, Owen, it's genuinely demented, if I would describe Rollerball. Got a lot of criticism for its depiction of ultra violence when it was released in 1975, but it also foretold a lot of kind of the developments in sport and the commercialization and there's tons in it actually about kind of sport today and how people were. I mean, I think this movie was actually set in 2018, so we haven't quite developed Rollerball to the extent that it's ready for launch on ESPN or whatever, but a lot of very interesting ideas. Some may differ on the effectiveness with which those messages are portrayed in this movie, but all comments and questions and opinions are welcome. Editor at secondcaptains.com, and maybe just put movie club in the subject title of your email.
Well, these guys have to sign up first, Murph. I mean, this one's going out especially to the Monday only. This message is especially for the Monday only listeners. So sign up to the World Service, first of all.
Yes.
Then watch the movie. Then send your thoughts in to Kieran. We're having a lot of fun. This is the point. We're having a lot of fun on the World Service these days. And don't forget, all episodes of the pod are ad-free if you become a member at secondcaptains.com for £5 a month plus VAT. The Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Owen.
Take care. Chat soon.
It's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.